inside the Crazy Ant Farm, man. How are you?
Doing fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Oh, dude, living the dream, my man. Living the dream. Currently in two different locations, but hey, yeah. You know, we're doing it.
Dude, super excited to have you on because you are a like-minded individual, writer, director, yes. Creator, and we are as well. We have our own film and television production company trying to get a media company off the ground. So I feel like we'll be able to learn a thing or two from you during this conversation.
Sure. I've been through it all.
Oh, dude, that's the only way to do it, man. I feel like that's how you rise and grind is to go through it.
And I mean
so much to talk to you about, though, because you are like Logan said, everything, writer, producer, you know, actor. You've done darn near everything, and you've done it in different genres, which we're really excited to talk to you about. You know, you started off in the music game doing videos, and you're documentarian, and you've done feature films and like just all kinds of stuff, so we're super pumped. But what we like to do is try to start off with just a simple introduction, maybe to the listeners out there who aren't familiar with you. How'd you get started in the industry, man? Was it something you always kind of knew you wanted to do from an early age? Did you kind of fall into it? How'd you get started?
I did have a small Super 8 camera when I was young, and I did that. I guess that would probably be the start.
The background, man.
I would say I kind of fell into it through another way, though, is through music, which is my first love, really. When I was young, and then during the 90s when the whole grunge thing was happening, and they actually showed videos on MTV.
That's right.
All the record companies would, you know, especially their new bands, they'd want a video for. And I'm extremely visual, and so the medium just it really fit with me very well. And then just being, I don't know if you've ever, I mean, I don't know if I heard Dave Grohl say it best once. In an interview where he said, you know, there's this thing that happens when you're young, and if you grasp music and it becomes your thing and it means the world to you and it becomes part of you. He goes, it doesn't matter how old you are. You're always in this little club with this new type of people. And he hit the nail on the head because I am the most comfortable around those type of people, around creative people, you know, or who aren't putting judgment on your stuff and just willing to open the world to anything.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
There's two in particular music videos that you shot that kind of sculpted my upbringing, my childhood. One being Under the Bridge, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and then the second one being Man in the Box, Alice in Chains. When I read that in your bio, I was like, holy shit, this is like such a monumental moment. So like, where do you grab your inspiration for music videos? Do you listen to the song first and then come up with something in your head, or do you talk to the band, or how does that work?
I see it just since from a young age, I've just had this whole visual thing. I'm an extremely visual person. I can, you know, just even now I read a script and I see the whole thing before I even shoot it. So, but especially with music, and everything I do now has a little music video in when I pick all the music for feature film, I'll make sure that I'm in charge of the music for it too. So, but I think I already have, back to your question, is that I already, usually when I had to listen to the song, I already have some idea of something that I would want to throw in there. And, it was real gratifying when it in the beginning, back in those days, when I would walk in a room with artists that I was a big fan of, and I would say, well, what do you want to do with what are you thinking about doing with the video? And they wouldn't have a clue. They'd say, I don't know, you know, like, and then I would give them a little idea and they go, yes, let's do that. And that type of stuff was really gratifying, you know, when I was young, and it gave me a lot of confidence then.
Yeah, dude. Well, I mean, it had to have been, I'm just what,
Under the Bridge, you know, Anthony and the guys talk about it all the time about where that song comes from, and that point of life that Anthony was going through at that point, and truly, you know, the struggle that it, so I'm curious about when you made that approach about that video and knowing that the point of life that he was in when that song was written and where that whole thing comes from. Did you keep that in mind when you said, okay, here's my approach, what I'm seeing visually for this video? And was he open to that? Like, okay, but let me give you this because this was what was going on, kind of a thing. Was it a collaboration there or what?
It was. They did want to shoot some of it live, but it was actually Anthony's idea to go out, and he wanted to be walking around the street. But at that time, they were just this kind of underground band in LA.
Right,
right.
You know, they did have a few, and they were picking up some steam nationwide. But at that time, you know, they weren't that big. But he had that idea, so I was the second unit director on that, and so they gave me the camera to go out and walk the street with him. Nice. And nobody knew who he was. We were
right.
Boombox there. We were blasting. It was like four guys, you know, like, and he and him, and he would walk down the street and he was singing it. So that's my part to that biggest part to that video, besides shooting inside with the live stuff.
Love that, though. Love that.
Yeah, that's super epic. And I've always, this is such a random question, because we do know that, you know, a couple of band members have been interchangeable for Red Hot Chili Peppers. I've always wondered this, and it's a perfect time to ask, which guitar player was that in the music video? I'm always so curious because he's got the beanie cap on and the with the strings, and I can't figure out which guitar player it was because he's like looking down the whole time.
Yeah, it's John Frusciante.
Yeah. Ah, okay. You answered my lifelong question. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I think they wrote that song with LL, with the original guitar player, though.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah. So music videos, like back then, like you said, back in the good old days of MTV, right? They were literally like small films, short films, right? You had to really come at it like a film director. And then they kind of just transitioned, you know, and then we kind of started to lose steam, and as they were moving away from videos and everything like that. But I think early on, and we hear about it so often, there were so many filmmakers who broke ground and started their careers in that genre of doing those music videos. Talk about that. Did you ever see, was the plan? I know you talked about your love for the music and everything, but did you know that the plan was eventually to move onto the film and television and stuff like that? Or was it always, I'm loving what I'm doing, this is my jam right here?
No, that's a good question. If the whole thing is, it is the music business. And so back then, they, especially in the 90s, it was such a great time for the business side of it, because you know, they made this thing that they made for 3 cents called an album, and they sold it for $15. And
that's right.
Yeah, and that was the only way to get it. And then when CDs came out in the 90s, they resold that whole catalog again, and they had so much money. So giving a budget for $100,000 to a band they just signed that had maybe one or two kind of hit songs, and maybe it was a band too that you may never ever hear from again, you know, like, seriously. Give $100,000 budget, which you could do a lot of stuff with to go shoot a song, you know. So that was the day back then when that era, I loved it. And so I always tell people that if the music business had stayed the same, I probably may have not left it much, because I loved it so much. I loved doing it. I loved, you know, when you could make a living off doing it. But then there came the time when digital started, and you could just see it happening, because that same, you know, $100,000 budget that I told you about, you'd go in there and they go, well, this guy over here, he says he can do it for $30,000. Then you start doing the math and you're like, I'm going to lose money on this.
Exactly. So crazy. Yeah. It's so interesting too, to talk about transitions in the music industry and transitions into your own career. So with being in the documentary lane as well as filmmaking lane, which went first? Did you easily go up to documentary and then to like feature films and projects like that, or was it kind of vice versa?
Yeah, even during that time, I when I was making videos, I took some writing classes at UCLA. Yeah. And just because I was writing mini scripts kind of for videos at the time, and I took some writing classes and started writing my own material, and that's kind of how I transitioned into that stuff. I had a short film at the Hard to Come By film, which is,
yeah,
we won the Manhattan Festival, and I won an LA Festival as best director that year, and that changed.
Nice.
Because then people started looking at my stuff.
Right.
That's right. That's right.
Scripts and stuff, and so that was kind of the progression.
Do you have one or the other that you prefer more? Do you like the documentary style where you can go and kind of like, because I feel like documentaries can sometimes be more artsy than the films, right? You're like, you can get deeper into it or take it in different directions. Or do you prefer the film and being able to tell the story through the film?
I think right now, I probably the rest of my life, I would probably not do a documentary again. Documentaries are they really take a long time, and you have to be so involved in that. And I have so many things going on right now that probably wouldn't be something I would do again. But I don't have the energy for it to do one project. Really, I want to concentrate on everything that I'm doing at the time. To make it the best possible.
Well, that's, I mean, like I talked about at the beginning, learning something, because we've actually been toying with the idea of like trying to figure out a subject matter to create a documentary with. But at the same time, we have various projects and multiple stages of development. So it's like, you know, that's an interesting point. You know, when you're doing a documentary, you have to be able to focus 100% of your time on that, be able to go on location, be in every step of the way. So that's interesting.
Documentaries are a lot harder to make than a feature.
Yeah.
The harder thing is to get the money to make the feature.
Exactly.
Right.
But documentary, it's, you put in all that work. I mean, if you're watching a subject, I think you obviously looked at my IMDb page, but yeah, there's a documentary in there about the wolf being released from yeah, Yellowstone when they reintroduced the wolf, but that I spent weeks in tents, you know, just,
oh goodness,
right, you know, waiting for that right moment, going out looking for stuff, and you watch the whole documentary and all that work isn't shown inside of it.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I want to dive into this a little bit, because I think that there's a lot of people who don't really understand the role of a producer, right? And you're a producer as well. And like you just brought up, the hardest part about making movies is the money, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if you're a storyteller, if you're a creator, if you're an artist, you've got that. It's the money. It's like, how do we, so talk about the producing aspect of it. Do you enjoy the challenge of having to try to put together a film, get the financing, the distribution, the hiring, and all of the stuff that goes along with the producing? Or do you have to, because it's a necessity, it's one of those things, I don't like to do it, but I got to do it kind of a thing?
That part of I don't like as much. And I'm very fortunate that I have a wife who's an attorney, but she's also been a producer on many of my things, or one of the producers on most of my things. And so from the beginning, she's very good at relations with the money side of it. But we also had some other producers that were in this last Through the Outdoor, but she's always there at the beginning.
I love that, though, because I'm watching the Warner Brothers documentary series right now. And one of the CEOs, I forget his name at the moment, escapes me. He talks about how, you know, it's important to know what you don't know so that you can put the people who do know that thing into that role and you trust them so that you can let them excel at what they do. And I think that's important.
100%. That's, you know what, it's probably the key thing in being a director is having that crew around you, you know, that can look at, as much as I've done camera, the new digital cameras.
Yeah.
There's DPs that know that way better than I do now, you know, and the right way. I, you know, when I started off, there was always a focuser on the camera and, but now the guy's sitting off there in the corner with this little digital remote, you know?
Right.
Yep. Yep.
And then on the last thing I shot, I said, I was watching, did you get the focus? The guy rewound it to me and it was perfect picture.
Oh my goodness.
You know, that's a great point though, because Logan and I, we direct together, and Logan, there's that age gap there. So I'm like you, you know, I have my old 8mm in the back and the Super 8s, and I'm a film guy. That's how I came up. He came up in the digital age. And so now everything is shot on digital. When I try to say I want to shoot something on film, they're like, oh, but the budget, right? And, you know, you got to really fight to get it on film. But yeah. I love that we have that difference, because he is able to say, okay, this is what we shoot on now, and I got this. I got the camera, you know, aspect. Here's what we're going to do, kind of a thing. And I can bring that old school mentality about, okay, we got the camera thing now. Now let me show you the old school part of the actual film making and what this is and this is. And it works really well as a balance, you know. And I don't think that people realize that transition there for a little while. It was difficult. I don't know about you, but I had that hard time. Like, man, I need to hear it rolling. I need to see, you know, kind of because the.
Me too. And yeah. I never thought that until really, literally until like the red kind of came out. I would mix sometimes, especially in music video, I would mix sometimes that raw type of tape video, you know,
like, right.
You know, mix it with film inside the video, but really I started out with film like you too, and it was always so fresh and clean. And now digital is fresh and clean like that too. It is. And you can do so much with it. I embraced the digital age, you know, when it did happen. I don't know it as well as a lot as younger DPs, you know, that really came up in it, but I know what I want and they can get it on that camera too.
Yes.
And then if it's a little wrong, you can tweak it in the color at the end.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Exactly. And on my end, I learned, you know, got to check the gate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Money. That's the thing, right? When you heard it running, that was the sound of money going through. You couldn't just delete and do it again. Oh, no, you burnt then, film. Yeah.
And then you go and you develop it and you go, gotta shoot it again. It wasn't
That's right. Oh my gosh. I love when we talk to old school film guys, man. It gets me going. I'm like, the good old days. But you're right though. I think these new cameras are capable. And if you get the younger guys that know, and that goes back to what Logan was saying about being smart enough to know what you don't know and put somebody that does know in charge of that and say, I know what I want. I also know I can't get it. So do it for me.
I love that. But I'm very curious and I'm very excited to talk about this, because my fiance, she is absolutely in love with serial killers and in love with like the aspects and different things like that. So I want to talk about the project you are here to promote, In Through the Outdoor. Yes. Explain what that is and how that even got brought to you. Explain, you know, the dynamic.
Yeah. So I did it kind of through a long story, but I had a feature film financed right before COVID with some great producers involved, and it was a bigger budget kind of sci-fi Christmas film. We had a casting director, and we were casting the film, moving forward with it. But you guys will understand this maybe a little bit, but before, at that time, if you had something that you could get the theater, or there's certain groups of theaters that you could get interested in it, they'll give you a pre-sale.
That's right.
Yeah.
So they financed it part with this theater pre-sale. And so March 2020 comes around, first doing one more casting for casting. This girl's flying in from New York, and the casting director calls me, you know, there's this thing going on. Maybe we should postpone it a week.
That week never came.
At the end of April, all of our theater money, the theater's business was completely never going to come to life again. And yep. and all our theater money was gone. And we kind of just sat dormant for a while. But I did, since all the streaming services were picking up shows, we're looking for content. Our producers knew I had this series that I had written, which is called In Through the Outdoor, and that's how we got here from that. But the series is sci-fi. It's actually historical fiction thriller is the way we call it.
Yeah,
but the history part of it is there was a serial killer, which is referred to as America's first serial killer, in Chicago in 1893. His name was H.H. Holmes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and he was convicted of 13 murders and he was executed. But he had this hotel which over 40 different hidden rooms, passages.
Yeah.
You could come in your room in the middle of the night, which is the creepiest thing, and like all the guests checked out, you know, the next day. Nobody's
I don't know what happened. It's kind of sad that I'm getting excited about hearing about this, because I remember like I did some research on the World's Fair, and then it was during that time that H.H. Holmes was committing all of these kidnappings and killings and things like that.
Well, his hotel was called the World's Fair Hotel.
Ah, that's what it was.
And even the way he got that property was like the property was owned by a pharmacist.
Oh.
Did this whole business deal with the pharmacist, and all of a sudden the pharmacist ended up missing and had signed over the whole property to him.
Oh my goodness.
Like what?
I mean, it's everything. If you the whole guy's whole life, he was nothing but a psychopath.
Yeah.
And he would lure girls to that hotel by placing ads in like small town newspapers, you know, like I need a maid for the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
They were never seen again. But anyways, my story is that the fictional part of it is that in present day, a young entrepreneur has just sold his company.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and he buys this hotel because it's going to be torn down.
Mm.
And his fiance doesn't like that he's done this, but anyways, he goes and he starts refurbishing it. And deep in the basement, he finds this hidden room with an old unfinished 1893 time machine in the room.
Mm.
Nice.
That relies on chemicals to,
yeah.
And the only thing they were missing was lithium.
Mm.
So he has this now on his phone, and he does this experiment, hooks up the time machine, and him and his fiance get sucked through the door and back to 1893.
That sounds intense. Yeah, that's I was like about amazing. To say.
Talk about a series of unfortunate events.
Like, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my gosh. And you have an amazing cast. So, like, talk about the cast. Because you've worked with a couple of them in the past also. So, did you write this in knowing who you wanted? Or was it a process like, okay, I have this, and now let me find who I want? Or what?
Well, character actor Garrett M. Brown is a very close friend for 20 years.
Okay.
Artistically we jive off each other, and so
yeah.
And as far as what he does is acting, he's been a character actor in dozens and dozens and dozens of films, and he everything from Uncle Buck to later generation known from Kick-Ass,
yeah.
And you know he's in a series right now, but called I think it's called Good Trouble, but anyways he's a friend, so he is in this. He once again he plays the once they go back in time, they look for a relative, and he plays a great grandfather to our time travel.
Oh, okay,
all right, nice.
That's really cool. And I mean, where was it shot? Because you know, location is everything. So where was it shot?
It was shot in Hollywood, Chicago, which is down here.
We had a great
studio. Our production designer is Fawn Davis, who he's worked on everything from Raiders of Lost Ark, Star Wars.
Oh, wow.
Like kind of a, he was on, they filmed Mythbusters at the studio.
Nice. You
know, the very Mythbusters nice. Series. So they can do anything. And so this guy made me a time machine. a crazy 1893 time machine. He just, you know, it was fantastic working, but it was all shot here locally.
That's nice. Really cool. And I'm curious too, because I know didn't the hotel get like it got demolished, right? Like
yeah, it's no so longer my, there. My story is it's not demolished and they're buying it before it gets demolished. But it did get torn down because nobody did.
Yeah, nobody was gonna go in there. Well, I was gonna ask, did you walk by the original location to like try to, I don't know, methodness or something? I mean,
no, but the I'll give you a little bit of Hollywood secret here is that the hotel the exterior of the hotel that we do live out here is a house hotel. It's like, okay. It was a mansion that was actually moved to Los Angeles from Wisconsin.
Oh wow.
It's in the beginning of it, but it just looks so great. And I found out later that I don't know if you know the tattoo artist Kat Von D.
She
owns that house.
Oh wow.
So
another thing too though, that I feel like can be challenging but then also awesome is anytime you do period pieces, right? And you gotta the costume design and the production design and the look of all that. Was that a challenge? Did you just have a full out fun with that? Like, did you have great costume designer and like, oh no, this is what I want. We're going to the 1800s. Give it to me, kind of a thing.
The great thing is that at the studio we shot at, which is Fonco Studios here in LA, they're a one-stop shop. They got amazing costume designers that can do anything. And I'd walk in there and they'd go, what do you think of this? And I go, it's perfect.
nice.
That's awesome. I mean, it's crew is so important. People that you have worked with on multiple occasions is so important because, you know, sometimes you step on set where you don't necessarily know everybody. And it's almost like speaking two different languages sometimes, you know, you're trying to interpret something and they're just not picking it up. And that's something we haven't really talked about a lot on the show is about, you know, how crews carry from projects to project. So I'm sure that you have your certain crew that, you know, that you could follow or and take with you on every single project, right?
Yes. Well, yeah. Having a first AD is really key. And having a great script supervisor. So those two, and then your DP who's having that guy, because really those four people are your community. With constantly, you know, and so just like you said, having somebody you can sit there and go, no, I'm going to move the camera from this right here and we're going to bring it over here and you're going to pull back. If you can tell somebody that, who totally gets your vision without going, now wait, how,
like what?
I don't get it. And then you're going, oh, wait. Yeah, then it's really nice. And I found like I work so much faster with somebody when we all are in that sync of communication. You know,
oh, for
like,
sure.
What you're talking for about, sure. Not have any of those. I try to, and I run the type of crew where, you know, you can, I don't care if you're the grip, you know, down here, the first guy that out of the thing, if you got something to tell me directly. Mm-hmm. You don't have to stay away from me, you know, like I look at every piece of the crew as part of a collaboration to make this thing. And if everyone's not happy and doing their thing, I mean, unfortunately, you know, like I'm going to give you a negative story just for a second, but during this COVID thing, I don't know if you guys have shot during COVID
did actually. Yeah.
And we had a COVID compliance officer that, that I had no control. It was one person out there that I had no control over. And it was just one of those things where I almost had to bite my tongue for a whole week because she was just, it was one person that went into this whole group where everybody's getting along and it, just, you know, everyone was upset, you know, like,
yeah,
yeah. And you know, that's all it takes, right? That's all it takes is just one, yeah, one person to throw it all off. And they just don't realize that it's so important. Yeah, I like your approach though. We direct the same way. No one person on that set is any more important or less important than anybody else. I don't care what your job is. And if you have a better way to do something or something that would make it easier, or you say it. Don't be scared to come to me and say, hey, I think this might work a little better. What do you think? The worst I'm going to say is no. But what if it is a better idea? What if it is a better way, right? It's you got to be able to do that.
I start during craft services, and when they part the line for me to go up there, I go, like, I'm in the back of this line. You're working harder than me.
That's it. That's exactly right.
I love that. That's so awesome. Well, listen, man, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us today. I mean, it's been just an absolute joy. It's always nice for us specifically to get people behind the camera to talk more about the process and everything because it's such a learning experience.
Well, and it's cool when you meet some guys that you would hang out with, you know, like
absolutely.
That, like you said, man, hanging around and knowing, that's when you know you're about around a bunch of like-minded people. You think the same, you appreciate the same stuff. That's where you feel most comfortable. That's where you're like, this is my people right here. And dude, we love it. Yeah. So tell everybody, I know it made its debut recently at the Dances with Films Festival, but when will the film be available for everybody to see, or is it out already? Where can they watch it?
It you know, there's going to be an announcement in the near future. It you know, there's a strike going on, and we we are going to announce something in the near future. But we did have a premiere on Friday night, which I'm still recovering from a little bit. You know,
it's all good.
We did it. It was at the Chinese Theater, and it was Friday night, and the place was packed, and it was amazing. It was a great night, and so the series we did premiere, but look soon on it. We will announce on like our Instagram, which is Magic TP Films on Instagram. So when it's time to announce, so
there you go. Well, all the fun stuff, right? Everybody follows you. We'll send them all that way to make sure so they don't miss it.
Awesome.
Well, all right, man. Thank you again so much. Take care, and we'll be talking to you soon, man.
All right. Great meeting you guys.
Great meeting you. Bye. Oh my goodness. Talk about just a good old fun time. I love talking to crew people and directors and creators because like we see so much of ourselves and experiences that we've been through these people. It's an amazing thing.
Oh my gosh, dude. And you know, anytime they reference the camera, the film,
I know.
The 8mm, I'm like, yeah, this is a winner. Just, I think though, you know, what I really liked about that interview is what works with us so well. There's that old school guy that has the appreciation for the new era and how it's going and has learned like we have to make it work together. So anytime we can come across people like that, the industry that are doing what we're doing and understand that, it's an amazing conversation, man.
It's so good. It's so good. And like so many different things, because we also love music. We also love like history, especially when it comes to like serial killers. You know, it's a guilty pleasure.
I'm surprised Emily didn't say, does he have Anthony's number?
Yeah, exactly. threw Emily under the bus a little bit. That's fine. But yes, such a good time, man. Such a good time. Excited for the future with that one.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you again, Dale Peterson, for coming on the show.